like dogs. So you don't have to go outside of yourself always to find something that you will worship and follow that will lead you downhill. Your own self is the biggest threat to you. That's why we were taught from the very early days of the Nation of Islam, first know yourself. But many of us, most of us I would say, we had been so thoroughly robbed of all understanding of how the world is built. We couldn't read, most of us. We couldn't even write. Someone else had to read to us. I'm talking about the membership of the Nation of Islam. In the early 30s, there weren't many who could read and write. That's why the writing of that letter was so important. It was to train them or get them in the habit, force them to try to write, you see. And I have a man over here bearing witness to me who was back there in those days. The brother of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, may peace be upon him, is right over here, and I can hear him. There he is, Minister John. He says that's right, so I got a living witness right here. We weren't educated enough to be told things in civilized language. We had to be told it in mathematical language, a language that would work on our mind scientifically and mathematically to bring our mind slowly out of darkness and backwardness into light and progress. Let's continue here now. I want to go to another. I believe I have it marked off here. Yes, here it is. I'll read this verse here now to show you that the Bible used the same expression as the Holy Quran. Or the Holy Quran used the same expression the Bible used for these forms or influences, developing influences in the person, in the natural makeup of the person, that can cause problems if that is meant to be king, ruler, or head in the person close this eye and let the inferior part of the person take over. I won't read all of this. What we want is just one word here. So what is it he said just then? Such are men whose heart God has sealed and who follow their own lust. The word lust here in Arabic language is ahwa'a. Ahwa'ahum means their own lust. Ahwa'ahum. The singular form of this word ahwa is hawa. And hawa is the same word the Bible used called hava. The Jews pronounce the waw, the wa, the, v. So the Jews say hava, and we say in Arabic hawa. It means a poetic name for the forces in the person that arises from physical needs. See, there are forces in you that arises from spiritual needs. They use the expression spiritual. Moral righteousness, justice. All of these forces arise from a different part of you. You don't have to be hungry or full to start thinking of moral excellence. You can be hungry and you can be caught up into hunger for, you can be physically hungry, and you can be overtaken by a hunger for moral excellence. Is that right? And you can be physically full, have everything you want physically, and you can still be caught up in the hunger for moral excellence. Is that right? So this particular moral development, mental, moral, and spiritual thing that develops in us that really makes the person, this does not look for its food from the same sources that the physical body looks for its food from. The physical body looks for its food from the physical world because the physical body is nothing but the physical world in this form. So it has to look for its food from the physical world, from the earth and from the air and from water. Is that right? But the person within the body, the life now that has manifested in that body, is not of the physical earth. It is, as the Holy Quran says, it is another creation. And the Bible, and both Bible and Holy Quran, teaches us that this creation has its origin in the originator himself. So it is not truly a creation in the sense that the physical world is creation. It is something divine. All right, we can talk for a long time, but we want to keep moving. Now, brothers and sisters, I don't know how many of you still hold on to the belief that Eve means a real physical flesh and blood woman. If there are some of you that still hold on to that, I want to tell you that you're holding on to something that is primitive, something that is unreal, stupid, and harmful to all women on the face of the earth. If Eve was a physical flesh and blood woman, then we should be afraid of women. Brothers, we should keep a gun on women. Because the Bible tells us that man didn't start to go wrong until Eve got him to do what she wanted him to do. The Bible tells us that the first enemy of man was Eve. The devil couldn't reach the man, but he could reach Eve, according to the Bible. And he reached Eve and then seduced Eve, and Eve, she put one over Adam, seduced Adam, and he fell. When he fell, he lost his position as a great creature in the world. He lost his divinity. He lost his rule over the garden. He lost his rule over his wife. And his descendants, his children, turned against him. Is that right? So the man lost everything. Now, if we believe that the woman is a weak creature, for the devil to come up to and suggest some evil to her and bring us down, then I say we have the wrong idea of women. And as long as we keep this idea of women, we can never respect women. And we are taught in the Nation of Islam that we must respect our women. So in order for us to respect our women, we have to first get rid of these old disrespectful notions or ideas out of Christian religion that we have accepted. I used to sit and watch TV, Women Live. And I hear the women live and women liberators talking about what they got to do to liberate women. I said to myself, fool, you found everything but the biggest thing that enslaves you. And that is that Bible teaching that you are some partner with the devil, working against man. Be at the convention next Sunday, and we are going to bring out some surprising things. Now, as much that we haven't said on this subject, but of Adam, Eve, the tree, but continue to come, and as you come, you'll learn more and more about these characters that are no more than descriptions of the life forces that develop in every human being. That's why Genesis, in the fifth chapter, I believe, of Genesis, the term Adam is used to name male and female. It says, in the day that he created them and named them Adam. So the Adam is used in the singular form in Genesis 5, I believe it is. And it is used to name both sexes, male and female. Now, if God has promised the kingdom to Adam the man that he made, if he had promised him rule in the creation, promised to make him the crown of creation. This is the teaching in theology. And if Jesus now, the return, the completion out of perfection of that man called Christ, if he's the one to rule the world and he's called second Adam, if that doesn't include woman, then woman, you ought to knock on the door of heaven and say, I'd like to speak to that God. I've been bearing all his little divine sons, wiping their fannies and worrying with them for 9 months in my belly, and for years after they come out, get them fit so they can do something for God. And now he tells me that I'm just an accomplice with the devil, and the only divine is this man that you cleaned up as a baby. I would like to take a look at that God that would do something like that and see what kind of a... You'd expect to see, you know, if some spiritual gate or door could be open and you could look in heaven and see God on the throne, if he was really that type of God, you'd expect to see some overgrown baby, you know, weighing about 5,000 pounds with a diaper on or one of those Pampers pinned up, you know, saying, yes, that's my decree. It stays like that. No change in my word. Give me my balls. Yeah, it's a baby religion. That's why in the nation of Islam, the whole knowledge of this world is called the knowledge out of the mind of a six-year-old child. I want to quickly sum this up to show you how important it is that you realize just what is your true identity. Your true identity is not in that you see in a glass mirror. Your true identity is that you see in your mind, in your conscience. When you are thinking about yourself, when you are reflecting on the strength of yourself, morally, spiritually, intellectually, that's when you're seeing yourself. When you look in the mirror, you're looking at something that carries you or bears you. You're looking at a medium that enables you to communicate with other earthly or material things. It's necessary, just as a mic is necessary to carry my voice to you. It's necessary just as a car is necessary to take you across country, and the heater is necessary in it to keep you warm if it's wintertime, and a roof over that car is necessary to keep rain and whatnot from falling on you. Is that right? But it's a car. It's something that's carrying you. It's something that you're in. It's serving as a means of carriage or transport, and it's serving as a means of protection. It even serves as a means of comfort. You put a heater in it, and you put a radio in it. Is that right? And some fools start thinking that the car is them. His wife is at home laying up there in the house, moaning and groaning. She can't get a decent pair of shoes to wear. Can't get decent clothes to put on. Can't get decent food for her children. The rent is way, way behind. And she's worried, think maybe next week they're going to sit out on the street and that fool out there rubbing up his Eldorado. Just wiping away on his pretty Eldorado. Now, summing this up, let us quickly go and reflect upon the history of our history as slaves and how we were made slaves. What did they do to make us slaves? They took us from our own history, culture, and tradition. Is that right? Then look at look at the development now, or the progress, how we progress into slavery, and I use the word progress to refer to the progression into slavery. We were taken from the land and then put in the hulls of ships. In the hulls of these ships, we were crammed in like sardines. No effort was made to give you anything that would make you think that you're human or you're going to be treated or respected as human beings. You were put in the hull of a ship, crammed in like sardines. Whatever you had to do, you did it right there. You couldn't say, "Master, may I use the washroom?" If you wanted to use it, you used it right there. Now, what was this designed to do? This was designed to break, to destroy, to break up and destroy that true life within the body. Treat you as body, treat you as flesh. Disregard you as person within the flesh. And eventually what will happen if you survive this, the person within the flesh will die and the flesh will become stronger than the person within the flesh. Let's continue to listen now. Believe it or not, we have all the answers. Now, I want you to follow this here and see just how it happened. Okay, first thing, they broke your spirit. They made you accept to be handled like flesh. Just like an animal, just like flesh. Then they took you and gradually let you have a little physical freedom. And at the same time, while they were gradually letting you have a little more physical freedom, they were putting ideas into your mind that will take over the job of building the physical and keeping the inward person dead. They were working on the Bible, on Christian religion. They were training special Uncle Tom preachers to preach you into physical things out of a spiritual thing. Now you say, "Oh, I've no sirree. I can't understand that. The church made us spiritual." You think it made you spiritual. It made you physical. It told you that you didn't have any opportunity in this world, that your hope was in a world to come. It told you that you were spiritual and that you have life, future life, as a spiritual being. But it didn't tell you that you had an opportunity right now to come into heaven spiritually. You have to wait until you die physically to come into heaven spiritually. So what did this do to you in effect? It made you satisfied to give up on any human elevation and live with whatever the world put on you. So what was your pleasure then? Your pleasure was eating, sleeping. Your pleasures were reduced to animal pleasures. I know my brother there understands me. He's a doctor of psychology. He understands what I'm saying. Maybe one day he'll write it up so you can better understand it. I hope he will. Because I'm not a teacher. I'm not a doctor of any language, of any field of study. But I have been blessed by God to see the problem. All right, let me go on to explain to you now. Here is what happened. Since you can't develop that the human excellence in you, you have to wait until you die physically to come into a real human world. You give up hope on it. So your pleasure becomes the pleasures of the lowest animal. In fact, even less than the lowest animal. Because the lowest of animals have some sense of animal dignity. They have some sense of an animal spirituality, if you can understand my use of the term spirituality. They have a social life, they have pleasure, they have recreation, but none of this was in the slave's life, you see. So all he could hope for is that he'll have a good supper after he worked hard and come in hungry. He was hoping that he'd have enough old cheap food to fill him up, enough water to drink and quench his thirst, a place where he can rest his wearied body. And if you listen to the spiritual songs in those ancient days, long time, not ancient days, but you know what I mean, the days of slavery, early days of slavery, those songs were songs that were asking for the physical things of life. Is that right? They sung for golden slippers, white robes, golden crown, sweet milk and honey, a harp to play on. These are physical things. I want to walk down that golden street. Is that right? I want to wash in the River Jordan, because that old plantation didn't provide any running water for you to wash up in. You had to work sun up to sun down and get up funky and start right back to work again. So those slaves cried for some clean running water. They were reduced to creatures of physical desires and aspirations. Even the heaven, though it was called spiritual, the heaven that they hoped for was a physical heaven. But look what the Holy Quran says. It says, the Bible too, that in neglecting the real cultivation of the real life within us, not only does that higher form within the physical body die and suffer, but even the physical body falls under a curse. Our people, the slaves, they begin to neglect themselves physically. They love to eat, enjoy eating, but they grow all out of shape. They didn't care much about keeping clean, go around filthy and stinking, take bath once a week maybe, wash up a little bit. They neglected themselves, didn't have the desire to keep their hair nice. White man come up with some old fast chemical to conk your hair. Brother bought it. A hot iron to straighten sister's hair, she bought it. Because see, that's faster. Burn it straight, and then I don't have to worry about it for 3 or 4 days. So we grew into, we grew out of the human life into an animal life, even less than an animal, hoping for a physical, material heaven, completely materialized, made physical, not materialized. That's too high a word. Physical, made physical, physicalized. Can we use a word like that? What is that? Physicalized. I have to check with the doctor over there, you see. He knows the language of the book, too. Physicalized. We had been physicalized to even dream of a heaven that was physical. And in becoming physicalized, there was nothing in the physical person to rule over and lift up the physical body. So the physical body fell down because it had no strong person or body in it to care for its upliftment. Do you follow what I'm saying? All right, let's quickly go on. We're going to sum it up. You'll be out of here by 4 o'clock, I think. All right, now, after cramping us in physical conditions that serve to break down the real human in the body and make it just give up hope, then they put ideas into our mind that will feed us in a psychological way, in a very deceitful way, would feed our mind with physical slaves, with physical chains that would come in the form of words, but would be more stronger as chains on us to keep us in that kind of enslavement. than anything you can imagine. The Christian religion became a powerful doctrine, a powerful preaching to keep us in that kind of enslavement. Even the God, though they called him a spiritual God, they give him in a physical form, and they taught the slaves to trust in that God and to give themselves wholeheartedly to Jesus, that he was their only salvation. Is that right? So the slaves fell in love not with God the Father. They didn't fall in love with God the Father, a spiritual being. They fell in love with God the Son in the flesh, a physical being. And they thought, when they thought about God, they thought about the physical Christ on the cross. When they sung their praise, their songs of praises for God, they were singing songs thinking of a physical man on a cross. They thought of him dying physically. They thought of him suffering physically and dying physically for their sins. Is that right? So even their God became physical. Their God became physical and their heaven became physical. There was nothing to elevate the true life within the body, nothing to feed it and draw it up. Let's keep on and see if we close this out now. If we were first taken out of a human environment, out of a human society, and crammed into a physical environment to make us physical, to kill our human spirit, then we know that one sure solution to bringing the people back to life is to take them out of the physical cramp, being physically cramped, to give them space, to overcome the harmful, filthy conditions that were brought about by cramping them together. The cramping of our people together in the hulls of the ships forced us to live with our own filth. Do you understand? Now, if we're going to correct the problem that enslavement brought about in us, then we should start first teaching our people to clean themselves up. Do you understand? If you want to raise that man back to life, go back and start with the first problem that was created for him and solve that problem. And then bring it on up to the present time, and that's a sure solution to the problems of that people. Now, you can guess that solution. You can come up with all kind of theories. But you can work yourself to death, and the people can be in bond, mental, spiritual, and moral bondage for thousands of years, waiting for you to theorize, to come up with some powerful theory for their salvation. The simple thing to do is just identify what has been done to kill them or to destroy them, and then start correcting it. Is that right or wrong? Does that make sense? Yes, it does. Hold up now. So the first thing that we began doing in the Nation of Islam, under the wise guidance of Master Farad Muhammad, as it has been taught for 40 years by Master Elijah Muhammad. First thing that we began to do is teach our people that you have to clean yourself up. I remember 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when people come in the door, they were inspected. The sisters couldn't get in if they had dirty shoes. The brothers couldn't get in if they had dirty shoes. Say, brother, shine your shoes. If his priest wasn't in his pants, he was wearing slouchy pants, say, brother, press your pants. If his hair wasn't clean and neat, brother, do something about your hair. Is that right? I'm talking about olden days. How many people we have around here that was here about 20 or 30, 40 years ago? Raise your hand. 20 years or more ago. All right, see, we have witnesses here. You know what I'm talking about. When you came up, the first thing you ran into was somebody inspecting you for personal cleanliness, for hygiene, and presentableness, to see if you were presentable. And if you wasn't physically presentable, if you weren't clean and smelling right, they told you to go home and clean up and come back. This is what they did right here in this temple. It wasn't this temple, it was on 43rd Street or 35th Street, but it was still this temple. Not this physical place, but this temple. So the first thing was done that was done in the Nation of Islam was an effort to bring that person out of the tendency the tendency to just live and put up with himself in unpresentable form or image. He had to first be made dissatisfied with himself in the condition that the world had designed for him. When he became dissatisfied with his physical uncleanliness, then the teachings gradually began to work another job. And that job was to teach him responsibility. Every member in the temple was given some responsibility. If he wasn't a minister, he was a captain or a secretary or a lieutenant. If he was just a brother in the fruit, he was given some duty. He had to handle a cleanup detail or something. He was given some responsibility. This was designed to make the man and woman come back into the sense of responsibility. See, as slaves, the sense of responsibility was killed in us. We didn't feel any responsibility to ourselves. Everything that a self needed, we looked to master for it. We had no sense of responsibility to each other. The master was responsible for all of us. You understand? So if we were doing a job, that job was done under the master. We were only serving or slaving for the master. So what the Nation of Islam did was put these people in jobs and say, you are doing this, and it's not for the white man. You're not even in his world. This is our world. You are doing this for a black man. And you better do it like you like it and respect those who are over you. So what we did was gradually kill this whole thing in us that we don't recognize no responsibility to ourselves and kind, and we don't recognize any justification for us accepting that they tell us what to do. So we have no responsibility to care for each other, and we have no responsibility to obey each other. You see, this was the old slave attitude. So the Nation of Islam had to destroy this in us. And we did it by our practice. Because the mind was not developed enough. The white man had destroyed our minds to such an extent that it wasn't developed enough to be taught what to do, and we carried out. So habits had to be built. And the people had to be brought through habits that would undo old habits. Nation-building habits that will destroy slave-making habits. Okay, we're going to let you go in a minute now. We're just about wrapping it up. The last thing that was that the nation had to do was to elevate the intellect of the brothers and sisters in the temple to make them dissatisfied with themselves in ignorance. The nation had to make our people dissatisfied with themselves in ignorance. They had to take on a love for knowledge. No matter what kind of knowledge it is, if it's real knowledge, the Nation of Islam promoted that knowledge and told the brothers and sisters that they are to take on the knowledge and grow in knowledge. We didn't care where the knowledge came from. If the knowledge came from China, it was good knowledge if it was knowledge. If it came from Asia, Africa, Europe, or America, all knowledge that was good knowledge, it was promoted here in the Temple of Islam. Gradually, the mind began to grow higher and higher. This enabled us to really overcome all the setbacks of slavery. Now, brothers and sisters, in my conclusion, I'm saying this, that if your destruction began with the destruction of your willpower as a human being, then your restoration should begin with the restoration of your willpower as a human being. So the first job is to bring about in you a growth, a development of willpower. Then after the willpower is developed, then the willpower, the creature, can be disciplined. He can be given responsibility, and he can be disciplined. But if there's no willpower in a person, there's nothing you can do but slave that people. I repeat that. If there's no willpower in a person, there's nothing you can do to them but slave them. Willpower is what rules in you. And if I'm going to give you some responsibility and then walk off and leave you by yourself, you're going to have some rule in you that will guarantee me that you are responsible, that you can do what I told you to do. Do you understand? But if you don't have no willpower in you, I can't trust you to do anything unless I got a gun on your head, a threat of death over you, or got you locked up in chains or shackles or something. So the first thing was the job we did was restore the willpower, then began disciplining, guiding, and directing the person, teaching them responsibility to self and responsibility to self-rule or self-leadership, that is, black leadership. Then the last thing that we do is bring the mind out of bondage into freedom. Bring the mind out of darkness into light. Bring the mind out of baby thought into grown-up thought. That's the last thing we do. And once you do that, you don't have to worry about people anymore. Follow me, Elijah Muhammad said this is a baby nation. He, as the leader of a baby nation, he had to worry with this nation. He had to blow your nose, change your diaper, tell you how to walk, how to sit down. Is that right?